This is a man that needs no introduction.
Who is this guy?
The most knowledgeable columnist in the city of Pittsburgh.
Some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey.
He goes by only one name.
Hotter than Bond, cooler than Bullet. Shaft.
No, it's not Shaft. It's Rossi. And he's here right now on Trip Live Radio.
Is Rob Rossi the John Tortorella of the writing profession, or is John Tortorella the Rob Rossi of the coaching profession? Which of those two would be more accurate to you guys? They're both back. Rob Rossi with us and John Tortorella in Columbus with the Jackets. How are you, Rob?
I would love to have John Tortorella's salary and opportunities in case the Trib ever deems I failed at my job. He certainly gets a lot of chances.
Yes, he does.
He sounds like a dessert in an Italian restaurant. I'll have the Tortorella, no ice cream, though.
So I actually think that's a good hire for them, though. I do. I think when you have a team that's off to a start like theirs, you need somebody that has a commanding presence. And, you know, here's the thing about John. He's a proven winner in this league. I mean, does he come with a lot of abrasiveness? Absolutely. But he's a proven winner. And I think if anybody can turn that around with a pretty talented team, it's him.
You were pretty high on Columbus before the year began, Rossi. I mean, more surprised that they're 0-7. Yeah, well, and I agree with you. I mean, how could you not after the way they finished? What happened?
Do we lose Rob?
I think we lost Rob.
No, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. What did you see out there? Did you watch any Columbus, and why are they 0-7?
I haven't watched a ton of them. I mean, look, they're not a great defensive team in terms of their back end. Neither is Pittsburgh. But I think the problem with Columbus is, you know, they play a real bad brand of overall defensive hockey. You know, the Columbus Blue Jackets forwards do not play responsible hockey, and their goaltending has not been exceptional. The difference, I think, really between the Penguins and the Blue Jackets right now in terms of, you know, you're talking about one team has three wins, one team has none. Marc-Andre Fleury has been brilliant for the Penguins. And when you are a team struggling to find the right type of identity, or any identity, you need a goaltender who can really establish that he's going to keep you in the games. He's going to make those saves in the critical moments. And Marc-Andre Fleury's done that. This is what an MVP goaltender looks like. It's not always a dominant guy like Carey Price. Sometimes it's just that guy that in a stretch where things are going to hell, you need somebody to sort of prevent you from completely falling in to, you know, to the demon's lair. And Fleury's done that. And, you know, Columbus has not gotten that type of performance. And it's troubling because, you know, Columbus's goaltender has won a Vezina trophy. So you would think they'd want that type of goaltending or expect it, but they certainly haven't received it.
Rob, I know you thought that this homestand could maybe even have a coaching change if they didn't snap out of it. They have snapped out. I mean, I'm not overly impressed with the way they've won. They've kind of won ugly, but they've still won. At least they've kind of they made it a do-over anyway.
They did. Look, the Penguins did not afford themselves by going 0-3 the opportunity to have any concern over what style points would be. Points mattered, and you know, as down as I am on the way they've played and as suspect as I am about their potential to be a really good hockey team, they needed to get 6 points minimum on this homestand. I think that's the number I gave you guys. And they got it. And now they have a chance to have a really good homestand from a standpoint of racking up points. And that's what you need to do. You would have to be completely in the tank for the Penguins or completely being paid by the Penguins to look at what they've done this past week beyond getting the points and say you're comfortable with anything. They look like a team that has lost offensively. Even their power play, I mean, we're going to make a big deal about that, but they had one power play goal last night. It was because Sidney Crosby took a great shot. They're still scoring a lot of goals on great shots. They seem to be one of the better teams in the league at generating chances but not beating goaltenders. So that's why I don't always take the shot totals and the scoring chances to be a great measure of a team, because the Penguins have been, for the better part of the past however many months, a team that does get a lot of chances but doesn't score a lot of goals. So what does that mean?
Rob, how do you think we should interpret the power play, at least in the sense that, okay, it was great that Sidney finally scored and he did it from the right circle on the power play, but then is that also bad news because now he's never going to leave it?
Yeah, I would. That's how I would interpret it. I would interpret it as, did you see the winning goal? And I know it was 4-on-3, but did you see the winning goal? Did you see what they were trying to do on the winning goal?
That's how it should look.
Did you see it getting Malkin, what they were trying? This power play can become great if they get it through their heads as a coaching staff and as a players, that the best weapon they have is Evgeny Malkin slap shot.
From there.
If they make, what?
From there, not from the left point.
From there. Well, honestly, from wherever he wants to take it, but specifically from there, yes. From there. And, look, their power play is problematic because they don't get into the zone very well, and they don't win a lot of faceoffs on the power play. And I've, you know, started to come around to the idea that they should put two defensemen on the power play as opposed to, you know, here's the way I would run the power play, guys. I would have the rover be Letang. I would have the point man be Mata. I'd have Malkin be positioned where he was, and basically use him in the Ovechkin role, float him only enough so that you get him, open for that shot. And then I would have Crosby, behind the net, darting from behind the net to right around the crease. And then on the other side, I'd have Kessel coming from the wall into the slot. I would have them moving constantly and force teams to decide. And, Guy, I'd love to hear your theory on this. Force teams to decide with their defensemen who they're going to try to collapse upon and then force those guys up high, those high forwards, to try to figure out, do they want to let Letang try to roam and maybe make use of his right-handed snapshot, or do you want to leave Malkin open to get that thing, to get that slap shot working? And here's the thing. It would be entirely dependent on working of Ole Mata being given the keys to the power play and letting him run the thing.
But I
think that would be an intriguing look.
I like it, but what I like, just in general, when their power play is stale, it's flat-footed. When you coach little kids, keep your feet moving, always be in motion. They get five guys out there that don't move out of a 4x4 square the entire 2 minutes, even if they have puck possession.
Yeah, right.
I thought Crosby floated around a lot more last night, even though he scored the goal from his favorite spot. And I think that helped. He was behind the net some on the power play that they scored on, and even the one that they didn't score on when it was still a 5-on-4. I thought guys were moving, and I think that's the key, regardless of which five are out there.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. In the second power play, that was a pretty good power play, even though it didn't generate a goal. Sid came out of the circle, was behind the net, but eventually just sort of gravitated right back into it again. Now, it wasn't bad in that situation because Malkin actually had the puck on the other side and generated some offense. See, the one thing, another thing I like about Malkin.
Well, you're killing a power play, Tim, and you're in a box. You're not supposed to, you're supposed to stay in that box and not move. You don't follow guys around. If you want to get highly skilled Art Ross Trophy type players open, move them around. That box is staying there.
Yeah, and the other thing that I do like about Malkin in the right circle is that he's not along the blue line. And if he's along the blue line, he's more prone to make egregious mistakes. So if you put him in the right circle, he's less likely to turn the puck over in a very negative fashion.
Yeah, well, look, Evgeny Malkin's never been comfortable dating back to 2008 playing near the blue line on the power play. He's told me that repeatedly. And, you know, I just don't understand why the Penguins... The two things I've never understood about the Penguins with the way they use Evgeny Malkin historically is, and I'll give them credit. You know, I've been hard on this coaching staff. Last night, at times, they had Malkin where he should be on the power play. And they have, this year, had him on the penalty kill. Why the Penguins would not use Evgeny Malkin as a penalty killer when Russia always uses him as a penalty killer, because the one aspect of his game that is elite defensively is his ability to take the puck away. He's got an innate sense, and because of his physical size and coordination, he's got this ability to steal the puck while he's moving forward. Not a lot of guys can do it. And he does it, and he can just knock that puck away. He has the strength to knock that puck away from a guy and get it. It's very Mario Lemieux-like because of that reach.
You did it to Yager.
Long enough.
Did it to Yager.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big weapon on the penalty kill. And I've always, I remember telling Dan Bowlesman that every summer. Why don't you use it? I can't put Gene on the penalty kill. Sometimes the best penalty kill is the power play fearing a shorthanded opportunity.
You know, I thought there was another moment with Yager that was interesting to watch, and that was Sidney Crosby chasing him around the ice late in the game like a bloodhound. That was as much of an intrigue to watch for me as Sidney getting back on the scoreboard again. He really went after Yager. What was that, about 6 minutes left to go, Rob, where he just followed him around?
Yeah.
Well, it started early in the first period, though. I think
when he cross-checked him in the back?
Yeah, I think that got Sid engaged. I mean, I don't know if he needed to wake up, but that was a cold slap in the face. And whether it was taking face-offs or what, everything, even killing penalties a little bit, he was into it the rest of the night.
I think Sidney Crosby last night was going to be looking for a reason from Jaromir Jagr to get himself going. Now, Jagr gave him one, but I don't even think it was going to take much. And I've seen that from Sidney Crosby before. When he's not feeling comfortable, he will literally just convince himself that something has been done wrong to him, just so he can put himself into that dark, you know, disgusting place that he needs to go to pull himself out of the funk. And good for him, because great players do that. Sometimes you have to find the motivation somewhere else. High praise to him. Here's the problem, guys. They were very fortunate to win that game. They were very fortunate that game went to overtime. You saw, once again, two things in that game that should concern you. One, a team with a forecheck, like the Panthers had early, is going to just overwhelm the Penguins. Those first 10 minutes were just, you know, you just had the feeling, right? If the Panthers got a goal, this thing was going to go south quickly. Got to give a lot of credit to Marc-Andre Fleury in those early 10 minutes. The other part is, though, Penguins get up 1-0, and the Panthers make a defensive adjustment, and the next thing you know, the Penguins can't get the puck into the zone throughout the second period, and really a lot in the third. And it's troubling to see how quickly teams that play the Penguins, and correct me if you guys think I'm wrong, how quickly teams make an adjustment, and the Penguins just don't seem capable of responding.
Talking about that.
I think that's true.
That deep, dark place that Sidney Crosby gets to, Rob, that you referenced there, does that usually occur after one of your one-on-ones with him? Or is that...
although I haven't talked to Sid really this season, so, I mean, I was ready to do it. I said I was ready to take on the task of going there and pissing him off, and, you know, I've done this before, guys. I mean, everybody thinks I hate the Penguins, but I'm just willing to take a lot of heat so that they can hate me enough to win. Not my fault they haven't come up in the playoffs. It's not like I haven't been agitating them to try to spark them for years. I mean, sometimes I need some help. Where are the rest of you guys? Tim, you've agitated people. Come on.
I'm just waiting to get my 15-year video tribute on the Jumbotron, Rob.
Hey. I like Danny. Danny's a friend. I don't mind him getting a tribute. They give everybody else a tribute, so you might as well give.
Yeah, and he got it in that spot too. The first TV timeout of the first period. I'm just glad that they got it in there before they gave up a power play goal, or you know, with
that. I got a tribute in almost my 15th year there too. It's called a pink slip.
Rossi, before we let you go, we got to talk about your column today. You wrote about Pat Narduzzi and Pitt. What's the thing you're impressed most about of what Narduzzi has done since he's come over to the Panthers?
They're beating teams that they should beat. And, you know, to me, college football isn't that tricky. The better programs beat the teams they should beat, and that puts them in position to have, you know, a couple of games a year where they win big ones. So they got to continue doing that. No offense, Tim, but they should probably beat Syracuse. And if they do, they'll be 6-1. And look, if you beat the teams you should beat, especially in a weak division, you have a chance to go put yourself into the conference title game, and that's what Pitt will have if the Panthers win this week. So I think that does start with the coach. I think Pat Narduzzi has brought a structure and a preparedness to this team where there aren't a lot of situations they don't look like they are capable of being in position to handle. I don't think I thought that of the previous coaches for a long time here at Pitt. It's not an accident when you win close games. It's not an accident when you win close games with a quarterback who wasn't your starter at the beginning of the year and a running back who isn't the guy you thought would be the All-American potential Heisman Trophy guy. That's not an accident. That's because you're prepared well, because you're coached well, and he's doing that job. But he's got to continue it, because if they lose to Syracuse, it's going to be one of those things where you wonder, is it just the same old Panthers waiting to backslide?
Or, now that Narduzzi's so good, fear that he's going to leave after 1 year and and
I don't think you have to worry about that because, guys, here's the difference between Pat Narduzzi at Pitt and other coaches who have been at Pitt. Pat Narduzzi right now has a administration that has not only given him a lot of power, he is very influential within the athletics department right now. They have given him money to spend on things, and that's a big part of what a coach wants. If a coach is thinking about something other than his own monetary situation, he's thinking about, does he have the money to go out and spend on assistants? Does he have the money to make facility upgrades? And Pitt, by everything I've heard from Pat Narduzzi and others, has done that for him, and that's a big step forward for the athletic department.
Good stuff, Rossi, and an excellent read. Thanks for coming on, as always. We'll talk to you on Friday.
Thanks, Rob.
Absolutely, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
Later, Rob.
Rob Rossi talking Narduzzi in his column today. And Torts being back, first team in 18 years in the league that started 0-7. The Columbus Blue Jackets fired their coach this morning.
Who was the last one?
I got to look that up. I just saw the tweet about 18 years.
I saw Molinari's tweet last night that, well, it was great that the Canadians started 7-0. The last team to do that was the Penguins in 86-87, and they missed the playoffs.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that puts it in perspective. Sid did shoot more. That's pretty obvious. Jason Mackey wrote about that again today, that Mike Johnston had publicly challenged him. 14 shot attempts against Florida last night, 9 that he put on goal. The power play goal that he scored, can he score there regularly, Tim?
No.
Like I know you're saying.
No, he hasn't. No, the answer is no.
That was like a perfect shot through like three bodies. It was a total seeing eye top corner. It was a great shot. I mean,
great,
I won't take it away from
Kunitz.
Him. Yeah.
I should have tweeted that out, but my eyes were still a little misty from the potastic tribute on the video of Jumbotron that I didn't really see Kunitz at first.
The cult hero that is Dan Potash.
Yes, of course.
You were at the rink, and you and Taylor covered some post-game locker room of the Pens win last night, Tim. Do you want to hear from Johnston here a little bit and give does the coach deserve a little bit of credit for not being 0-7 like Todd Richards? I mean, in the end, he did get three wins, not style points that maybe some people would have wanted. Here's what Mike Johnston had to say as he addressed the press after the game.
Thought we had a different look, threw a wrinkle at them as far as Gino on that other side there, Phil in the middle. One thing about Phil, when he slides into the middle, he occupies space. So when you saw Gino make the pass to Sid across seam, it's mainly because they're trying to tie up Phil in the middle. They're worried about him shooting from the middle of the box. So we have the flexibility. As I mentioned this morning, those three pieces can interchange. Gino can be on that side. Phil could be. Sid one time slid into the middle. I thought they had good interchange, but they were shooting. I think as soon as you get the puck, once you make a play, you've got to take it to the net. And I thought we had more of that shooting mentality. But the interchanging of those three pieces there, I like the look of it tonight.
Mike, to the best degree that you can you explain to us what communication you got from the refs on the two disallowed goals, the one for you and the one for them, and also if you know what specifically they were looking at on the offside? Was it Sidney catching the puck as he was coming across the blue line there?
On their disallowed goal, the call on the ice was a high stick, no goal, and that's what they found on the video replay. On the other one, I don't know. It looked like Girard was going to challenge a call. I'm not sure what happened. The bench, I couldn't really see. I know the ref was talking to him. In another situation, I was going to challenge the Kunitz one, but they called down for the review on that one. I thought Kunitz hit the puck, and it went in the net before he pushed the goal, Luongo, but they reviewed it, so I didn't have to challenge that. And then at the end, I believe, obviously it was the offside that they're challenging, but it didn't seem like it was close from my angle that I saw and from any review. So I'm not sure if they were just had heard information from their video guy or not, and at that point in the game, they might have thought it was close.
All right, so that's Mike Johnston. Now, the other thing that we didn't get to, Ken, when it came up for the rule interpretation anyway, or the disallowed goals, they seemed to balance out Kunitz and Riley Smith. The other part that came into play where it didn't balance out was Riley Smith getting checked into the boards by Letang, and there was no call, as opposed to Dumoulin getting checked to the boards from behind and getting a call, which led to the 4-on-3 in overtime.
Yeah, that's
which
huge.
Won the game. So actually,
that was a pretty blatant cross stick, didn't you think? The second one.
Here's what Dumoulin said.
What was Huberto yelling at you there? Did he
think that she sold it or dove into the boards or something?
Oh, he didn't say anything to me. I mean, I don't know if he meant to hit, like, push me that hard. I don't know if he knew that I was that far off the boards, but I mean, in that situation, I was a couple feet off the board, so I had really nothing to brace me from the cross check.
I thought he sold it. I thought he sold it more than Riley Smith did. If one was a penalty, the other was a penalty, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, we get back into what's the NHL going to call and what are they consistent about it. Nobody's ever sure what they're going to call. I thought that was a – you put a stick on him, you can't do that. I mean, it was just a dumb time to even come close. They had all the momentum that killed them. That was a bad penalty to take in the game. I did find, Guy, the last team to start 0-7. It was the 1997 Chicago Blackhawks.
Wow.
Under Craig Hartsburg,
yeah.
They did win their eighth game. They finished fifth place, though, that year.
Did he keep his job the whole year?
I guess so.
You know, the one thing, and we haven't talked about again, the Penguins have allowed the fewest goals in the division. You know?
Their defense, yeah, their defense.
It's still, it's not all Fleury. I mean, Fleury's played well.
I agree with you. I know what Rob said. Fleury has been good except for that Montreal game. No doubt, but I think the defense
has been a very pleasant serve. They can get the offense going just a little bit more. I mean, you know, I'm not asking them to score six goals a game, but score three a game rather than two.
I thought Scuderi played pretty well last night. I mean,
I thought he played pretty well the game before too. After he sat for a game,
maybe that's the best plan, just to keep him fresh, rotate him. And they got some back to backs coming up. That'll
be
an obvious
place. You know
what?
I think it depends on the kind of team that you're playing too. I mean, I think you know. I mean, he has great defensive instincts. People have undersold. I hated it when they lost him the first time, and he was a very big part of L.A. You know, he's older. He's not as good. The mistake they made was signing him for 4 years. But the guy can still play. He's not a top four defenseman. But I mean, his instincts, and you need somebody to settle things down a little bit. With a group of younger defensemen, most of whom are more offensive-minded.
And it was his shot that set up that second goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he had a nice assist on Saturday.
You could see that reaction from Roberto Luongo there. Oh, my God, I mishandled a Scuderi shot, and now it's 2-0. He dropped the puck, and then Sid picked it up and shoveled it over to Kessel, who scored the goal. And Luongo is just laying there on the ice like, oh, my God, of all people, I couldn't handle Scuderi's shot.
Tougher challenge on Thursday. Dallas comes back for the rematch. They're 5-1 and are a good team, so we'll see how that goes on Thursday. Quick pause. We got Jagoff of the Week votes coming in. Tortorella, Tomlin, and Joe Torre leading the way. Tim is campaigning for Chuck Pagano today.
Yep. Well, all TOs.
All TOs. I thought Antonio Brown would be a bigger player. He's fourth right now.
He's slipping.
He's in the mix.
I think
fourth.
If they were losing right now, people just look at him as Antonio being Antonio, and the Steelers are winning. Go over in a corner and talk to anybody that'll listen, and you know we'll keep stacking wins, hopefully.
The coach has got more votes than he does. The week the receiver pops off and yells at the quarterback, the coach is getting more vote than the player is.
And it's more about Tomlin's explanations and not X and O decisions, right?
Or lack of explanations. Or not
dismissive explanations.
Dismissive of serious questions. If it's a question he doesn't like, rather than, you know, he acts as if it's a bad question. And no, it's a question you don't like. It doesn't mean it's a bad question. Not that there aren't bad questions asked. Not as many as there used to be. Now that Tortolo doesn't go anymore.
It's because Tim asks the hard-hitting questions over there for us with Trip Total. I think I might vote Antonio just to get him sparked here, though. I think he deserves it this week. We'll talk a little more about the Cubs and their troubles and a little baseball on the way. A lot of bits and pieces we got to tie up here on Jagoff for the Week Wednesday. Tim, you had a couple I know you wanted to get to, including Antoine Randle L.
Oh, no, it's not so much Antoine. Well, it's kind of Antoine Randle L, but yeah.
Okay, we'll throw that into the pool. It's the Trib Live Radio Morning Show. We're brought to you, as always, by Duffy's Beer in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. Great weekly specials, including Miller Lite, Coors Light, Yingling 24-pack cans. It's specials this month for just $14.99. They are your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, and home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs. Jagoff of the Week voting continues next.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. beer. See all of our weekly specials at Duffy'sBeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at Duffy'sBeer.com.
Arnold Furniture, voted best place to buy furniture and carpet. Trip Total Media Reader's Choice Award Golden Winner. Arnold Furniture is located at 1633 5th Avenue in Arnold. Open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Thursday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Call Arnold Furniture at 724-337-6696. That's 724-337-6696. Or online at arnoldfurnitureinc.com.
Best wishes to all the local teams from our team at First Federal Savings and Loan Association of Greene County. Home equity loans. Utilize your equity for everything your heart desires. FDIC insured. Equal housing lender. NMLS number 458729. 6 convenient locations. For more information, go online right now at firstfederalofgreene.com. That's firstfederalofgreene.com.
At Greg Hook Chauvin Heating and Air Conditioning, your local Rheem dealer, your home and business comfort is our top priority. We value the opportunity to provide you prompt service on all brands, professional work, easy-to-understand proposals, fair, honest pricing of our products and services, replacement, repair, and service options. We recommend award-winning Rheem products. We service all brands of air conditioning and heating equipment, but we primarily recommend industry award-winning Rheem comfort systems for your home or business. Call us at 412-531-7464. That's 412-531-7464. Or check out our website at greghookshvac.com.
Visit us on facebook.com/Greg Hooks Heating Air Conditioning. Accept Visa, MasterCard, PA number 014420.